Hello everyone, we'll be answering your questions to get you one step closer to landing a job.
We're going to cover identifying your target job, traditional ways to job search, thinking outside the box to find jobs, and finally, closing that deal and shutting it down, securing those job opportunities.
This is the Public Health Insight Podcast. Before we move on, it is important to note that the views expressed in this podcast are our own and do not represent any of the organizations we work for or are affiliated with.
You're listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for all things public health and global health, from the Sustainable Development Goals to the social determinants of health, as well as interesting dialogues about the diverse career opportunities that exist in these fields. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so other people like you can benefit from our content. My name is Gordon, and I'm joined by my dear friend LaShawn and our friend Dr. Sajjad Fazal.
All-star team over here. So my name is Sajjad Fazal, and I completed the Doctor of Pharmacy degree from Manipal University. After that, I did the Master of Public Health at Western University. So we're all Western alums over here. And currently, I'm the Manager of Research Impact Communication and Evaluation at Crohn's and Colitis Canada.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
As fairly recent grads, right, we're very passionate about staying connected with the up-and-coming public health professionals and sharing our lessons learned in any way we can to enhance the field of public health. So that's why we're here. And now for the moment you've all been waiting for. So we'll be going through all those hundreds of questions that were submitted. We consolidated them into themes. And keep in mind that while we're focused on providing our lessons learned and tips for job searching in Canada, know that these can likely also be adapted to other contexts as well. So the first question, this is going to be sort of a rapid fire question. So the two of you, you'll give me a yes or no, or maybe in between answer and a quick remark on why you said that. Fair? Okay. So the first question we have is, what is the current availability of remote work from home options in public health? And do you think this is something that's here to stay? So Dr. Fazal, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's good availability. And it's going to be here to stay, at least for some jobs. Yeah, that's how it is for us right now.
Okay.
I echo his sentiments completely. I love working from home, remote work. It allows a lot of flexibility, and I hope it's here to stay. And I believe that there's a lot of infrastructure that has been created to allow that process to facilitate itself.
Okay. And so the job, it sounds like remote job options are here to stay, but is it easy to find relevant jobs with a master's in public health after graduating from university in Canada? LaShawn.
I'll go with it depends, because it also depends a lot about the environment of the different jobs available and also the work that you put in and the efforts you put in to find those certain jobs.
Okay. All right. Dr. Fazal?
Yeah, I think LaShawn is on the money. It depends on the type of job. If you're looking, as a public health inspector or something that leads to infectious disease, you probably have to be on the ground. But if it's something like a coordinator, policy advisor within government and health charities, yeah, you definitely get many remote jobs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good distinction. So after, you know, someone's decided to pursue some kind of graduate degree and they want to know, are there any graduate degrees in particular that give you an edge in the public health job market? For example, a Master of Science in Public Health versus an MPH, or an MPH, general MPH versus a specialization, or something like Master's in Global Health versus a Master in Public Health. Is there anyone that stands out amongst the rest, or depends? Are you going to give me a cop-out answer again?
Who are you asking?
Dr. Fazal, you go first.
Yeah, I think it depends. And again, I came back to the same answer. If you're looking at working in policy programs in general, then going for a general MPH like the one offered at Western would work. If you're looking at working specifically in epidemiology, then going for a Master's of Public Health like the one that U of T offers that specializes in epidemiology or workplace health and safety, that would work. So I think it all depends on what your interest is, what your goal is. If you're not working, if you're someone who say, my dream is to work for the WHO, then probably better off doing a global health than an MPH, right? So I think it depends what your end goal is, and then you choose a program that way. However, this doesn't mean you can't work in all the fields with the programs. You can always adjust and move around.
All right.
Yep.
LaShawn.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of flexibility between these programs. And like myself, I did the Masters of Public Health program at Western and the MSc Global Health program at McMaster. They all taught a bunch of different core skills that can be useful for any different career within the global health or public health space. So it really depends on the types of skills you want, the type of careers you want. And like Lily mentioned in the chat, I think Lily completed an MSc in qualitative public health research or something along those lines. If you're focusing on qualitative research, maybe that is a good idea, and maybe that's your career goal. Maybe that is a good idea to specialize. But oftentimes what I find is a lot of people don't know what they want to do. So that's why someone like me has opted for a more generalized MPH approach.
All right. Thanks for those answers. So we have a question here, and I really like this question in particular because it's focusing on those underlying things that make someone a good public health practitioner. So the question here is, what are the essential competencies and soft skills for a public health career in Canada? So what are your thoughts? If you had to maybe name three, what would those be? I'll start with you, LaShawn.
Great question. So I guess in terms of the soft skills, I would have to go with communication skills for sure, interpersonal skills. Realize that once you get into the workforce, you're not working with other students. You're working with people from all different backgrounds, experiences, cultures. So you want to be able to interact appropriately and professionally with everyone. So a lot of it has to do with your interpersonal skills. How well you get along with different people goes a long way. And then I would also say confidence, right? Like a lot of these things like job searching can be very daunting. And even in the workplace, if you're just starting off, you could lack a lot of confidence comparing yourself to others. But I kind of advise against that and allow you to reflect a bit to realize that, you know, you're here for a reason. You did these different degrees. You have this work experience. You got to be a bit more confident with your approach. So those are the three soft skills I would mention. In terms of competencies, I just want to shout out, I think the Canadian government put out a list of 7 competencies or core competency areas based on like 3,000 different public health professionals across Canada. So it's probably a solid set of core competencies to consider.
All right. Dr. Fazel.
Yes, I think I'm just going to give you a general answer for both sets of your questions, both parts of it. So communication skills, very important. In any public health field you want to work in, whether you're working in research or policy, you should be able to articulate your thoughts and get your point across. At the same time, you should be able to manage stakeholders who may not have the same goals as you do, right? So communication, number one. Number two, writing skills. Very important. Most often you'd be writing and justifying decisions or even writing an epidemiological report, for example, for infectious diseases. Very important writing skills. And by the way, if you're looking for a job, most likely they'll tell you to do a writing assignment, depending on which organization you go for. So you need to have good writing skills. And the third, I would say, is being analytical, right? Being able to analyze the situation, being solution-oriented when something comes up, being creative. At the end of the day, if you are getting into the workforce, they're not looking for the same old story, right? They're like, okay, what value can you bring and how can you solve a challenge that we currently have? So yeah, those three things.
Oh, that's fantastic. And even when people think of communication, they're thinking communicating with the media, very formal written reports, but even everyday emails. I remember a couple months ago, I sent an email to my boss and he called me and said, I really appreciate how clear and concise your emails are, and it's clear what decisions have to be taken from reading your emails. So something as simple as communicating on a day-to-day with your colleagues in emails, so there's no ambiguity with what specific requests are, that alone can be appreciated by your employer. So that's definitely communication.
Absolutely.
So we've just talked about skills, competencies, availability of jobs. People want to know, those we have a lot of recent graduates who don't have a lot of work experience and they want to know how they can stand out in the market. So how can these current students or recent graduates market themselves in a way that it's attractive to a potential employer? Dr. Fazel, let's start with you.
Yeah, so the question is how they're going to market themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a number of ways. I always am a big fan of LinkedIn. It's an amazing platform out there. And there's different ways you can use LinkedIn. First of all, basic thing, set up a profile. Have a profile picture, let people know you're a human being, not a bot, right, or a troll. Set up your basic details so that they know where you're coming from. The other thing is try to engage with other professionals, right? Comment on other people's posts. So for example, I have a bi-weekly public health newsletter, right? Share your thoughts, right? And I'll obviously notice you, right? Everyone else will notice, like, oh, who's this? What are they talking about? What their ideas are, right? And the public health space is very collaborative, right? Most of us like to interact, right? To talk about a topic, go down a rabbit hole once in a while. And then at the end of the day, I would also say is the etiquette of DMing someone on LinkedIn. Now, I get requests from so many students every week who need assistance, and I do my best to set a time to help them out. We pull each other up. But it's odd when someone says, hi, I need help in terms of finding an MPH program. Well, that doesn't give you much to go with. I don't know what your background is, what your interest. So normally I'd ask, so what's your background? What's your interest? You know, like, try to be very clear with what you need, what your ask is. So somebody will be like, oh, I just want to connect because I found some of your content interesting. Okay, that's fine. But if you have an ask or if you need advice or mentorship or something, be very specific. First of all, say hello, introduce yourself, and then come with your ask. So then when somebody has to reply you, then they know exactly how to help you out and go forward. So I think those are some of the things that I would say in general, how you would stand out.
Yeah, no, I really like that response, and I am a big LinkedIn person as well. But I'm going to kind of take it back a bit as well. When we were talking about, you know, marketing yourself with little to no relevant experience in quotations, I feel that many people have good experiences that they could change and modify and frame in a different way that allows you to market yourself as a public health professional. Like, what are we talking about here? We're talking about core soft skills that you could develop from your classes, you could develop from your volunteer opportunities, you can get them from your part-time jobs or full-time jobs. We're talking communication, we're talking teamwork, we're talking collaboration, we're talking critical thinking, we're talking writing, we're talking communicating. Right there and then, those are fundamental skills as public health and global health professionals. So don't turn your back on those experiences that you have used. And especially the volunteering experiences. Many jobs ask for work experience. Volunteer experiences, in many cases, can be counted towards your overall portfolio. Make sure you utilize them and frame them in ways that showcase them.
If I think of one example, people do group work, right, in university. And they might be working with some other partners, right? Let's say you're in your college, you're working with other classmates in other classes. You might be working with some professors and maybe some external partner, right? The way you would categorize that and phrase it in your resume would be, I conducted stakeholder engagement with this many partners, right? But as LeSean said, we normally think, oh, I did group work. No. You did stakeholder engagement and you can phrase it like that. So yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to just have that mindset, of transferable skills.
Fantastic. A lot of students or recent grads often sell themselves short, thinking that the experiences that they have are not valuable, or someone who has more experience is necessarily going to be more the right person for the job. I've been in a lot of situations where they would consider the underdog for job interviews. And you have to play up what you're good at. There's things that you're going to be good at. I think I have certain strengths that someone 20 years in the job won't have, and I'm going to play up those strengths. And I'm also, one thing that often doesn't come up a lot is talk about how your fresh perspective would benefit an organization versus someone who's been in the field for 20 years who might have blind spots, status quo, sight lines. That's very refreshing for an employer. Think about this. Put yourself in their shoes. They're working with, you know, LeSean's been my employee for 10 years. He always does the same thing, you know, for those 10 years. I really wish that he would adopt his methodologies to be better. And then you come right away in an interview with a solution to a problem that they didn't even tell you that they had. So you just have to think about what value you can add. Don't compare yourself necessarily to other people. Try to put your best self forward instead. So many jobs require, you know, that base level. We always see that dreaded 2 to 3 years experience. And people often wonder what that means. So we have a lot of questions asking, you touched on it a little bit earlier. In those 2 to 3 years of experience, can someone count their undergraduate experience or their graduate experience into those 2 to 3 years of experience? And how would they do it? You talked about that framing around group work, of framing it as stakeholder engagement on behalf of that organization. And then that would then allow you to include that into those 2 to 3 years. Is that what your mindset is, Dr. Fazel?
Yeah, so I think, you see, you want to be quite careful. So you should be ready to slightly exaggerate your strengths, but you shouldn't be lying or taking things out of context, right? So if you have done, like, if you work in a group and stuff and calling that stakeholder engagement, that's accurate because that's exactly what you've done. It's just a play of words, right? If you have taken down minutes, right? If you have written down what's been discussed in a group and then you discuss later, that's taking down minutes in a meeting, right? That's the same thing. However, when it comes to counting years, I'd say if you're doing internship or practicum or if you're volunteering, yes, definitely count it. The time you spent in class, I think that would be lying if you include that as your experience. Anything that's voluntary, that's let's say you're in school, but you spend the whole year working for an organization, like voluntary, that you include, right? Internships you include, and any other experience, you do include it. And I think it's well received by employees. So don't sell yourself short by saying, oh, I just did an internship. No, you did an internship. That's work experience. Don't even put it in voluntary. Stick it right there up in your work experience. Yeah.
Yep. And that's kind of 2 points there. The first one is when you have those volunteer positions, don't on your resume or cover letter say volunteer. What did you actually do? Were you a research assistant? Were you a public health, whatever? Like, mention what it is. Don't sell yourself short. Like, oftentimes when you do your resume or cover letter, it's just relevant experience. It doesn't differentiate between types. Like, was it a full-time? Was it part-time? No, you don't need to mention that. But again, what Dr. Fuzzle's saying is also, you don't want to lie, but there's some room to play around with some of these words here.
Perfect, perfect. And to that point, a lot of times, and I've spoken to recruiters as well, a lot of people put the position and then practicum student in bracket. No. For those 3 to 4 months, you were a research analyst, call it a research analyst. The recruiter is smart enough to know this was a time window of 2 to 3 months. It was probably internship. You don't need to spell it out for them. So that's just something to be mindful of. So should people, in those situations where people come up just a bit short, so you kind of talked about what should be classified as work experience and what maybe not so much. Should people be still going for those jobs that require 2 to 3 years of experience, even if they fall just short of that? What are your thoughts on that, LaShawn?
So speaking from personal experience, I've applied to jobs that say 2 to 3 years of experience or sometimes even more, and I've gotten interviews for those jobs. So there are other ways to showcase that you have what it takes. Specific job experience or working 3 to 5 years in and of itself is not valuable, but what kind of skills and wisdoms and learning opportunities can you bring to the table to a new organization? So if you show those intangibles off during an interview, a cover letter, maybe you do some sort of certifications and stuff, those can maybe counteract or balance that, right? And especially if it's in a case where there's not too many people applying for that job, they will more likely to be considering you as a candidate. So you, from my experience, I'd love to hear from you all as well, but from my experience, I have applied to positions that require more experience than I actually had, and it's been positive. But again, you want to take that, you want to be reasonable with that, right? You're not going to apply to a 10-year position or a 10-year experience position or a 5-year experience position. You also want to look at the skills that it takes, right? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be okay in that specific situation if you get the job? You know what I mean? So that's just a little caveat there.
Exactly. Dr. Fazel, over to you.
Yeah, I think LaShawn is very right. You know, when you graduate, you're not going to apply for a VP position, right?
You shouldn't. At least you shouldn't.
You shouldn't, yeah. But he's right in the sense that you don't necessarily need that exact years of experience. So why don't we say, so I go for what I call the minus two rule. If it's 5 years and you have 3 years of experience, you're good to go. If it's 8 years and you have 6 years of experience, you're good to go. So whatever the number is, minus two, you should be good to go. More than minus two, you are getting into a situation where maybe you're stretching too much. And the reason I would say if it takes maybe 5 years and you have 3 years of experience, you should apply. Or if you just came from graduate and the 2 to 3 years they ask and you apply, is because it depends what type of degree you have. So sometimes they'd say bachelor's degree, 5 years experience. However, if you have a master's, you already they already count that as part of work experience, right? If you have worked in that field or that specialization, they already count that. So yeah, so I would say have a judgment within, you know, whatever the years is, minus one, minus two. If you have that much experience, go for it.
Absolutely. And there's little sort of sneaky things you could do to check this out too. So on LinkedIn, you could look to see what people are occupying those positions and what was the gap between their undergrad and MPH. Gives you an idea, did they get the job right after graduating from MPH? Did they have prior work experience? Because people tend to put most of that information on LinkedIn. Another thing you should probably look into as well is when they post, when they do these job postings, consider the region. So a place like, if we're talking about Canada, Toronto will be very competitive to the point where you have maybe minimum experience 2 to 3, and then you have the pool is full of people with 7 to 10 years of experience because of the competitive job market. In another area, more remote area, they might be struggling because of the candidate pool to get anyone anywhere close to the level of experience that they want. So you have to factor in the position of power of the employer too. What options do they have available? You also have to consider a lot of times these job postings and these employers don't have realistic expectations for what a candidate is expected to do. So you a good indication is the salary. So if they're saying 5 years of experience, but they're only going to pay $21, you know that they have an unrealistic expectation. $21, master's degree, 5 years, you know that they have an unrealistic expectation. So you automatically know people with 5 years of experience who have worked previously won't apply to those jobs normally. So those are some of the little things that you can use to make your decision on if something is worthwhile or not. Anything else to add to that before we skip on over? Okay.
I think that was a very good advice. Also look at the amount that they pay, and that gives you a good indication. And I would just say, if I have to add to that, don't just go for what the title is. I saw somebody being called a policy advisor to the executive director, and they were paying him, well, they were offering 50,000 for the policy advisor for an executive director. And I was like, whoa, you know, that's way less for that type of role for reporting to that kind of person. Right. And so when I look at that, I'm like, okay. And then I look at the experience and they're like, oh, okay, somebody with a bachelor's degree and maybe 4 years experience. So then you can apply. So don't just see, oh, it's a policy advisor, I should start as a policy assistant. No, organizations play around with wordings a lot. Coordinator, specialist, analyst, assistant. They could play around based on what they want, and that's not going to tell you the level. It's the salary and the years of experience that you should be looking at there.
That's right.
And so related to that, actually, Gordon, is someone has a question. If they don't list the wage information, how do you navigate that? What do you think, Gordon?
You conduct some Google surveillance. So my strategy is I'll put in the job title. So ideally, you want to find an older job posting from that same organization where they may have listed the salary. That gives you an indication. Alternatively, there are certain websites that will give you a salary scale depending on what province it's located in. That's your second best option. The third best option is looking for the position in general, try to find similar regions. If it's Toronto, maybe look at Peel, York, and see what they're paying those positions. And you can have an educated guess as to what they would pay. And this also helps you down the line in salary negotiations, which we'll talk about later. Anything you want to add to that, Lashan?
Dr.
Faisal, go ahead.
So one of the best tools that I use is Glassdoor.
Glassdoor, the website. That's the one.
Yep. Put in a position, put in the name of the organization, and you'll get salaries that range within that for that organization and other organizations. So if it's a health charity, compare that. if it's a government, compare that. But Glassdoor is very accurate. Mm-hmm. Like you can actually get an accurate value and range. So that's a good way of going about it.
And I think they even have comments on their people's experiences. There's one job I was going to apply to way back and it was like, horrible place to work. And I'm like, no, thank you. And I just skipped it altogether.
Yeah, but also I guess with that, like people love trolling online too. So you want to also take True. That with, you know, a grain of salt. But yeah. That leads me to my next point of you. It might be a uncomfortable conversation sometimes, but you can also ask people you're comfortable asking, like what type of salary ranges can I expect for a given position, given my experience, given my credentials. So it's okay to have those type of conversations with people you're comfortable with.
All right. So when's the best time to start applying for jobs? So you start your MPH, maybe you did a 1 year program and you're in your second semester or you're finishing up your 2 year program. When would you say is generally the best time to start applying for jobs? Dr. Fazel, I'll start with you.
Okay. I would say when you start your practicum, it depends. Mm-hmm. Like I'm from the MPH program, you know, a practicum is 3 months. At that time, you start looking, get your feet into the water. And by the time you're mid to end your practicum, that's when you would make sure you start applying. Please make sure you give enough time. Sometimes, especially if it's a government job, the application process takes a month. I know it's horrible, but if you want to work in the government, it takes a month. And it's bad, but hey, what? Maybe when we become directors, we'll change that. But that's how it is, right? That's number one. Number two, keep in mind that not the first job you apply, you're going to get it, right? But when I was applying after the MPH or during my practicum, that means I had 2 masters, the pharmacy degree and the public health. So you'd expect I'd get jobs quite easily. But then again, I was an international student at the time, right, on a work permit. So I gave myself time. It took me 3 months, 100 resumes and cover letters submitted, all the way from political parties such as the Liberal Party, NDP, all as a policy analyst, all the way to, you know, research coordinator. You know, I just went crazy. I applied everywhere, all the way to New Brunswick. I was looking for a job, man. I was hustling. But then finally, I got a part-time job. And then I went to a full-time job. Now, I'll explain more about how I got the part-time job later when you talk about, like, you know, talking to recruiters and stuff. Mm-hmm. But be open to put your foot through the door. Be open for a part-time role. It's easier to get a job when you have a job.
Yeah, so I agree with Dr. Fuzzle's answer there. I would also also consider this idea too, though. You don't necessarily have to be applying for jobs at the beginning of your MPH program. But understand that it's also a good opportunity to create and cultivate things that will help facilitate the process later on. Now, what do I mean by that? Like Dr. Fazal said, create a LinkedIn. Network with guests that comes to your program or guests at your current or people at your work. You could start doing that before a contract ends or your school ends. So build those networks and then they'll become handy. So you don't want to network as soon as you need something. You want to network ahead of time before you even need something, right? And that's how you develop those meaningful networks.
And I think one thing to add to that is don't network for a job. Network for a long-term connection with the person and the organization. It's something that we miss out. Even I missed out when I was first beginning. I networked with so many people, had a good chat and conversation. When it came time to getting a job, some of them weren't ready to offer a job. And that's because budgets, restraints, whatever. So keep that in mind. You're not networking for a job. You're networking to have a long-term connection with the person and the organization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I would just add too. So yes, the best time to start looking is around maybe after you've secured your practicum, before you even start it. But you have to be cautious because at this point, you may or may not know what you like. So maybe you're going to do a practicum in epidemiology and you're thinking at that moment, I'm going to apply for epidemiological jobs. You go to Public Health Agency of Canada. After your first 4 weeks, you realize, yep, I hate this. I don't like stats and I don't like data. So during your practicum, as you start to discover a little bit more about yourself, is when you're in a best position to start applying for those jobs in which your interests and skills kind of align. So that's kind of the best place to start. And the timeline, you want to give yourself, I agree, 3 months. You want to give yourself about at least 3 months. It could move a little bit faster, but 3 months is a reasonable timeline. I applied, my practicum started in May 2019. I applied for jobs in June. And so the job that I got after my master's, I got that job interview in September after applying in June. And you have to realize, so in addition to, I know you mentioned around, about a month turnaround time, some positions that get listed, they put it out way before the vacancy is actually going to happen. So some of them move at very snail's pace. I completely forgot that I applied for that job. But that just goes to show that whenever you apply, you must save those job postings. Save those job postings because they'll get deleted from Indeed and whatever. And you, I know people who go to job interviews that don't remember what they applied for. I know this. This happens. So you always have to save, keep a spreadsheet, keep track of the jobs that you apply for, because they could come back to you in 2, 3, 4 months. Maybe their first candidate started a month and left, or you know, they weren't able to get someone else. So you just got to be mindful of that.
Oh, no, that's such an important point. Like, make sure you save it. And it's happened to me where, you know, I applied to a position, a month passes, and then I get the interview and I'm like, what are the core skills? What do they want again? Like, I want to know just so I could refresh myself. But anyways, what I ended up doing is there's like tools online that I could link. It's basically like a time machine type tool where there's like internet archives available still that you could go back and retrieve those things that have been taken down. So that's the tool that I use to go back. But let's prevent that as public health professionals and just download it while you can.
Yeah. So guess that won't help you in every situation though, because some like London Health Sciences Center, they have secured career portals where it's not indexed in Google.
Yep.
And you're in a situation if you let those expire and you didn't save the job posting. I've seen people show up not knowing what they're interviewing for and they're too embarrassed to ask. So don't let that happen to you. Thank you for listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for informative conversations, inspiring community action. If you enjoy our podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. See you in the next one.